Hey guys, Maria Menounos here. Before your favorite TV after show begins, we want to let you know about my new show on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109. It's called Conversations with Maria, and it's live Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Go to conversationswithmaria.com for more info. Buzz you later.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey, welcome, Castle fans, to this recap of season 8, episode 13 of Castle and Justice for All. I'm JJ Snyder. Thanks for joining us, guys. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you for giving us a thumbs up and also adding your comments. And if you're listening on SoundCloud, or iTunes for that matter, thank you for being there and give us a thumbs up.
That was my voiceover voice.
Your sexy voiceover voice.
Yes, and this is my co-host, Lucretia. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Well, I'm happy to be here and discuss And Justice for All, which the title was kind of misleading a little bit, but I did love it. And of course, you guys can always find me at LACRETIALYON all over the internet.
Hey, spell it right if you're going to do it, right? My friend Lucretia Ryan. Lion. Excuse
that
me.
That would be way more normal, right?
Lucretia Ryan. That would be a different direction. No, but we got the lion over here. Mm-hmm. And I'm J2 Snyder on Twitter and Instagram. Yes, And Justice for All is the title of the episode. And it's a very patriotic-themed episode in retrospect, right?
Yeah, I really like that there was these people learning English and stuff like that. But I, you know, with that title, I was just expecting like Jack Nicholson, Tom Cruise, like, you know, like courtroom scene. But it was just a little more subdued.
Kind of a softer theme. And that is, of course, the end of the Pledge of Allegiance, isn't it?
Yes.
With liberty and justice for all. Mm-hmm. For all, even including people who come to this country as immigrants and who are in ESL. Yes. English as a second language. Mm-hmm. Well, I loved that this gave Castle such a fun opportunity to play
the French Canadian.
The French Canadian. Oh my goodness, how fun was that?
And it's like, Nathan, you're from the other side of Canada.
Oh my gosh, fun. All right, well, in our cold open on the show, we're in a zoo. And man, I don't know if you've noticed, right at the very top of the show, they did a really super cool kind of cityscape of New York. Yeah. And I just really enjoy whatever cameraman and crew people went out to New York, and it looks to me like they were flying around in a helicopter and got all these groovy, gorgeous, like top of the building, super modern shots of New York. Those are gorgeous.
Yeah, and you totally forget that the show is filmed in a studio in LA.
That it is. Yes, right in Hollywood. That's right. Although, as we will see towards the end of the episode next week, the show's going to Hollywood. Were you excited
about that? Yes, because we'll actually be in Hollywood where the studio is. So there'll be a lot more like live shots sort of, you know, out, you know, in places that we would actually recognize.
Yes, that'll be really fun. I know, I'm sure the crew's like, well, this is going to be easy.
Yeah.
Okay, but in terms of this episode, so we are in the zoo, presumably in New York City, and we see a man who I just felt like I liked this guy, this Eddie Ramirez. He's just in the snake, in the reptile area of the zoo at night. He's the night keeper of the animals. He's walking around, you know, saying goodnight to the snakes. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of practicing a sentence in English.
Yeah.
Right? So we kind of get, okay, he's learning English. He's taking care of the zoo. And when one of the little reptiles got out of his cage and was down on the ground, first of all, gorgeous little animal.
Yeah, beautiful chameleon there.
Yes. Mm. And I thought about it later. Why I thought I like this guy, I think he's a good guy, is because the way he placed the chameleon back in the cage was very delicate. I don't know if you noticed that. And I was like, okay, he's a good guy because he's good to the animals.
That's how we judge people, right? How do they treat animals?
That's not how people. I judge people. Yeah. I don't know about you, but that's huge for me. All right, so then somebody else, though, was not so lovely because they hit him over the head pretty quickly with what we come to find out was a snake hook, something used to move the snakes. So that guy's a goner. Eddie Ramirez hits the floor. Mm. Yes?
Yeah, and, you know, it was kind of sad.
Yes. Okay, so it was kind of sad, mm-hmm. and we're getting a note from the booth here. So, okay, great. Excellent. Yeah. Thank you. Sometimes we get notes yeah, from the booth. We appreciate them helping us make the show happen. All right. So, right from the zoo, then, we go to Castle. He has writer's block.
Yes, I loved it. He's yelling at the cursor.
Yeah. Wasn't that cute?
It's like, yeah, that was so funny, because he's yelling at the computer, and you're like, what is he yelling at? Like, you know, what he's written, you know, he can't write. But no, it's the cursor itself. That's just so very, I guess, eccentric. I liked it.
Man, I sympathize, though. No. I think when you're trying to get a project done or you're procrastinating on your computer and you're just looking at the cursor, mm-hmm. I know that feeling, like, I have no idea what to write. Of course, for him, it's a bigger deal because he's a novelist. Did you notice that really cool picture behind his head in that scene,
yes.
of that staircase?
Mm-hmm.
I recognized the picture, but I didn't know what it was from. If anyone knows what picture that is.
I believe it's M.C. Escher, but I'm not sure. Yeah.
Okay, I thought Escher, too.
Really?
That's exactly what I thought. But then I thought Escher's was a drawing, and I thought this was a photograph.
Yeah, maybe it is a photograph instead of a drawing.
Hmm. I wish we had a picture of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. If anyone knows the answer to that, let us know. But it was a fun moment because we got to see him with Beckett.
Yes.
And they had a little romantic moment. And he said that he called her his muse. And said that, you know, he wished they could kind of stop pretending like they weren't together.
Yeah.
He has writer's block.
Yes.
Yes. At which case, Beckett pretty much gets a phone call and we're off to the zoo, to the crime scene with Ryan and Espo.
Yes, and of course, Castle wants to sneak a peek at the snakes.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, totally fascinating scene, especially since Eddie Ramirez, or who we are not sure yet, mm-hmm. has been confirmed as Eddie Ramirez, his body is in the snake pen.
Mm.
That was gross. That was gnarly. If you're afraid of snakes, you were not liking that scene.
Not really bothered by snakes per se, mm-hmm. but I was just disappointed they didn't do any snakes on a plane type jokes.
Ah, he would have liked that.
Yeah.
All right. So, Beckett, Ryan, and Espo, of course, are on the case, but Castle can't officially be involved with this case because he is supposed to be making himself scarce, and he and Beckett are not supposed to be working together. But of course, that doesn't last very long. Now, Haley and Alexis seem to have teamed up kind of once again, presenting themselves as teaming up, and they're holding down the fort back at Castle's headquarters, and also kind of encouraging him to keep working to find a case that's interesting.
Yeah.
And he happens to turn on the television and sees that somebody at the zoo has just been murdered in the snake pit, and this looks like a pretty interesting case. So there we go.
Yes.
Castle's on it.
Yeah, of course, he ran down to the morgue, and that was one of my favorite scenes, where she tries to, like, kiss him and be romantic, and he's like, it's a little creepy when you do it in front of a dead body. Inappropriate.
And then her face,
so funny.
When he said that, her facial reaction was so funny. It was almost like, what? I don't even.
Yeah.
How about before that, too? I thought you were going to talk about Perlmutter, because he...
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so he thinks that he really believes in this whole thing that Beckett and Castle aren't together.
Yeah,
and he's so excited about it. He's like, yeah, you shouldn't be with him. He's a dork. Do you think he really has a twin brother, or is it going to be him?
I think he really does. Like, the way he was talking, and I think... I don't know if he's ever mentioned about being married or something, but I didn't feel like it was him. I just thought it was just so awkward and weird and really fit his character because he is weird. And to me, it would just make more sense for him to be like, my twin brother, and this be a real person that he really is trying rather than hitting on Beckett, because he's never hit on Beckett before.
it was funny.
Yeah, she I thought it was so funny.
Like right away, like right when he said, "I'd like to set you up with, you know, someone really nice, like my twin brother," and she was like, "Ah, no, I'm just not ready." That was a very cute little scene.
Oh, and MMK Jerez has answered our question about the staircase picture. Oh, it's from William Curtis Rolfe. It's called Paris Staircase Downview.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like one of those tall townhomes in France where people live up 6 or 7 floors. Oh, neat. Thank you so much for sending us that. How cool is that? Definitely. But it was Escher-esque.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? You and I both thought that. That was funny. Okay. All right, cool. So another key piece of evidence, too, was unveiled here because next to Eddie Ramirez's body, which has now been confirmed as Eddie Ramirez, she Beckett, found the cell phone and found this text message that he was sent that was very kind of cryptic and in bad English, but basically said, "I'm going to kill you. I'm getting revenge on you."
See, and to me, I didn't even think immigrant learning English when I read that text. I just thought, you know, some young person.
You did?
You know, how we, you know, my generation, due to texting, has been, you know, losing their English skills. So that was funny. I was like, I didn't even think of somebody trying to learn English.
That's hilarious. Yeah. You just thought it was sort of like shortened,
gangster,
just kind of gangster text, and they could have thrown like an emoji in there or something, like a little knife or something.
Yeah, I mean, Alexis did, like, you know, encrypt the emojis before.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We loved that.
That was funny.
That was cool. Hey, we kind of saw more high tech, like they're really incorporating high tech when they were talking back and forth on the screens. We'll get to that later.
Yes.
Did you note that?
Yeah.
Like now that we're on this, like Castle's definitely trying to incorporate technology into their episodes, which I think is pretty cool. All right, well, to Castle, he responds to this right away because he's like, "Well, I'm kind of an expert with language, and so I can kind of help you to recognize the patterning, the way this person wrote this, well, if it comes to that." So that was interesting, yeah.
And he really is. Nathan went to college to be an English teacher, so that's a really fun way to tie in, like, his actual education. So, and that's why he's so good at being Castle as a writer, and a lot of this makes sense because both of his parents were English teachers, so he went to follow in their footsteps, but then became an actor.
Boy, we didn't see, speaking of parents, we didn't see enough Martha in this episode.
Yeah, I know, briefly the party and everything, but I think that was it.
And that was a nice scene, by the way.
Yes.
That was kind of the heart of the episode. Okay, so now back to Ryan, Espo, and Beckett, and they uncover right away that our victim, Eddie Ramirez, had $10,000 in his apartment. So right away, it's like, whoa, okay, this guy was involved in something. And they also identify the English as a second language class that he was part of. And also the fact that the text was sent at the same time the English as a second language class was happening, and Eddie hadn't been there. So there's like a bunch of pieces of the puzzle that get thrown at us right away. All right, so obviously Castle is the one who's going to...
Go undercover.
Because Ryan and Espo, and I thought this was really believable, actually. Ryan and Espo said, these are all people who've just come to the U.S., and the English teacher said, my students aren't going to trust you guys, you cops, because these are all folks from third world countries, and they don't trust cops.
Yeah, exactly.
So good luck with that.
Well, that was a good way to give Castle something to do, to be involved in the case still, and we get to see Nathan have a pretend French-Canadian accent, which is sexy, by the way.
Oh, it was so, so cute, and he really sold it well. He did it very well. Did you have any feelings about the guy who played the teacher? The teacher right away?
Yes, and I just now found this out. It was J.D. Walsh, and he's literally been in every TV show known to man. He's been on 2 and a Half Men, Franklin and Bash, Bones, pretty much all of it. That's why it was driving me crazy to figure out who this guy was. And so I suspected him at first, and just like several of our viewers said the same thing, but, you know, he seems sketchy.
I suspected him first because he was so innocent. I just thought, this guy's too nice that he's going to be tied into this somehow, but I didn't know how. So it's funny. You and I both had that instinct.
He just seems squirrely.
Yeah, squirrely. Mm. That's a good adjective. All right. So, by the way, Nathan's character, and good thing he got called by Becca to be part of this, because he had writer's block bad. Do you remember the little scene with him on the drums?
Drums, yes. He was like, really bored.
Yeah, he was so, so bored. Luckily, Becca called him and said, all right, we need ya. So, Jean-Luc. Jean-Luc was the Canadian
from Quebec. Character.
Yes, yes. And I loved it when all the students were in there and they said, and the teacher said, Mr. Emerson, what do you do, you know, for a job? I'm a chef.
Yeah.
And everyone was like delighted. That was a cute moment. Okay, so now we're being introduced to all these students. And to me, I was like immediately thinking, okay, who do we be suspicious of? Weren't you kind of scanning the room for like, okay, who's going to be involved in this?
Yes, because that's the thing is like when you get a room full of people, like a classroom or an office building, you don't know it's going to be somebody in there.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And of course, I immediately am thinking that the women all seem kind of nice right away. So I thought, oh, I don't think it's going to be any of the women. It was hard to kind of start to deduce who was going to be involved. Well, the first guy that Nathan thought was suspicious was this guy, Alistair.
Yes.
Who had the craziest accent ever. Isn't that wild that there's a Newcastle accent, a Geordie from Newcastle. Isn't it crazy that there's English-speaking accents that are completely, like, inaudible to most English speakers?
Yeah, I mean, it is really interesting because English, you know, was spread out throughout the world. It is hard for, just like, I mean, Canadian accents are different. They speak English and, you know, the British accent. They're South African. So many different ones. But yeah, like to hear like a Jordani Newcastle. I mean, I never even thought of that.
That was some thick business. It was made for some very fun comedy because every time he starts to talk like Ryan and Esper, like, oh, wow, we're not going to be able to interview this guy at all. So I was kind of surprised, too, because from the walk around that Castle did in the room, remember there was like a tall, dark-haired guy at the very end who kind of bumped into Castle?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's the guy who's suspicious. So when they called in Alistair, I was like, oh,
yeah,
it's not him. But he had stolen the test, so he could kind of tell that he conjugated English incorrectly in the same way. Right? That's how he linked Alistair to the text. Okay, very good. All right, well, Vikram is helping out. We see him in this episode.
And it was
fun. Some Krish Bala.
Yeah, and it's so funny because he's also running an AT&T commercial now that you probably even saw in a commercial break.
Oh, I did!
For the show, yeah, and it was so funny. I was like, hey, and then he makes a joke about a network, and I'm like, he should have said AT&T network. It would have been so funny.
Oh, my gosh. What does he do in the AT&T commercial? I didn't even notice.
Yeah, I guess it's just the one they have running now, you know, with the usual, you know, AT&T help girl. He's, you know, one of her customers, so...
Oh, wow. Good for him.
It's just funny. I'm like, hey, it's Vikram.
All right. There he is. He's all over the place. All right. And so he helps. He comes up. He was like really sassy. What did he say? I couldn't hear the line exactly, but he was like, who's the sexiest?
Yeah. I'm trying to think.
Who's the sexiest agent or something like that? And Espo's like, dude, yeah, I'm not saying you're sexy anything. Don't even. You're not going to get that out of me. That was cute, though. It was very playful. All right, so he puts his finger on these folks, the Zildjian brothers, and they have this club called the Zildjian Club. And this opens up a whole can of worms. So the 12th Precinct goes down to this, what looks like a nightclub, and confronts these two brothers who are a mess.
Yes.
They're like, oh, we just got into, what did they say? What kind of accident? A tree. What were they doing?
It was something to do with the tree.
Yeah, I don't even know. But it's like, okay, obviously you guys are caught up in this mess. But as it turns out, so they had been employing a few of the students from the ESL class, or at least one student, Ida. And they were kind of scamming her because she was an American citizen. Yeah. They're like, yeah, you can work here, but we're going to take 30% of your paycheck. So we start to find out that our victim, Eddie Ramirez, is actually a good guy.
Yeah, that he was helping the other people in the class to try and get their citizenship, you know, because that's, you know, what they're there for. But obviously we find out later, you know, someone in the class was taking advantage of all these people and pushing them towards this because he made money off the top of it.
Yes. What did you think of that moment when Beckett had to get some water? Kind of like I do now because I have a cold. She went over to the bar.
Yes.
In the Zoldana Club and got all the info.
Yes. You know, and that's the thing is Beckett can just do things that Crockett and Tubbs, Ryan and Espo can't do, right?
Totally. The sneaky. I wonder how often that happens as a real cop. Like when you're going to interview somebody and you end up talking to someone on the side and getting like more information. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, with Beckett, she doesn't look like a cop. So, you know, that's the thing is Ryan and Espo. I mean, I guess, you know, Espo would do great in a gay bar. They would love him.
Oh, but, you know. I'm sure he would love to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's cutie. Well, so is Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan.
Yeah,
he fits in the Irish mob. But yeah, you gotta know your scene.
I do think though there is this lady advantage sometimes to getting information that Beckett probably would benefit from. That sometimes people find you less threatening.
Yeah.
You know, and also they kind of want to do you a favor because they think you're nice and cute.
Yay, and they're like, hot girl, all
right. Yeah, right, exactly. So she did. She got a little side information right there. That was very effective. Okay. So, yeah, so Ida was from Senegal, by the way. And she wants to be a painter, and we started just kind of get, like, the story. We kind of, like, link into the heart behind this episode, and that is that here are some people who are kind of vulnerable. They're in this country for the first time. They don't have great language. They're trying to establish themselves. And they made a really interesting point in that scene where they were in the 12th precinct and they had the students on the board and they were like, well, this guy was a lawyer back in his country and now he runs a pretzel stand. Or, you know what I mean? They were, they kind of laid out and it kind of helped paint the picture in my imagination of, oh yeah, I guess that would be what it's like. You know, if you come here, you kind of got to start over.
Yeah.
Potentially.
And that is a lot of it, because I have friends that are immigrants, and yeah, they may have had like degrees in other countries or were doctors and stuff, but their licenses and things aren't good here, and even some of their degrees, and it's just so odd, especially considering it's not like America's like the top-rated education country.
But, no, no, we're not at this point. But we're number one in a lot of things.
Yeah. Reality TV shows.
And we make darn good hamburgers, I'd like to say. All right, so Marco Sutter comes up. All right, this is where things start to get really hairy. So another student we find out about is this gal, Anita Rodriguez. Okay, we find out about her. I think Vikram finds her actually in a jail in Texas. So we start to see that there is a pattern in this classroom, in the ESL classroom, and that is that students who have either been caught up in some kind of activity with Eddie or caught up in this guy, Marco Sutter, who's kind of a scammer and a total criminal, because we find out he has a major record. Okay, so Anita Rodriguez has disappeared and is now in a jail in Texas, we find out. She had been in the ESL classroom. And in her apartment, they got prints. The 12th Precinct went and did prints. And they trace it to this guy, Marco Sutter, who's bad to the bone. All right, so now we got a little closer. So Ryan and Espo go after him. And tell me what you thought was going to happen in that scene in the alleyway. Because I thought I didn't know what was going to happen. It was kind of scary.
Yeah, I kind of thought there'd be more of a shootout. But obviously, the FBI steps in. And then that's when they get their lovable nicknames, Crockett and Tubbs, Miami Vice style.
All right, so this FBI guy, Agent Napier, not nice.
Not at first, liking
the 12th precinct. No. No, that was interesting. He's definitely, which I guess, you know, happens, right? Between
the law enforcement
agencies and local police. But he's not having Beckett on this case at all. So basically, but she did a good job of standing her ground.
Oh, yeah. Beckett always does. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, she even worked for the feds before herself. So the thing is she doesn't play.
That's the thing with our girl. Yeah. Our girl Beckett. So she kind of leaves it on a neutral, leaves it neutral with the FBI guy, and just realizes, says to Ryan and us, "Well, guys, we're not going to like back down from this, but we're just going to tiptoe lightly because we don't know exactly what's happening here." And one good way she thought of tiptoeing lightly was to send someone who's not in the 12th precinct in to do a little mission for her. And that was Castle.
Yes, and not just Castle.
No, yeah, Haley.
Exactly.
Haley.
And with an even more fun accent than her already, you know, pretty one. That's what I liked, is she was able to do another voice and, you know, really kind of have a fun time with Castle.
Oh my gosh, we totally skipped over the fact. Yeah. Three accents for her.
Yeah.
For Tokes in this episode, Haley. By the way, fans, next week we are going to have the lovely Tokes Olagundeye in our studio. She will be joining us, the lovely actress who plays Haley, joining Lucretia and I for the recap. So please tune in and send us your questions, anything you'd like to know about her. Or the show, for that matter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That'll be groovy. Because we skipped over the fact that she translated that Newcastle accent.
Yes.
Yes. That was fun. I did not, however, feel very comfortable with this situation with her in the hallway with Castle and this judge. I just thought it was bad.
Yeah, I thought, because you know Castle loves to play and get involved in all this, so I knew that this was all planned and that he just wanted this to be so, I guess, dramatic and over the top to get this guy to, you know, spill. But he could have easily gone so many other ways than by having her shoot him.
Shoot
him? But it
was
funny.
I was like, oh, that's a good idea. Wait, presumably, he obviously had a bulletproof vest on.
Yes.
And she was pretending to be Eddie's wife, like angry wife, Eddie the victim, assuming that the judge had something to do with Eddie's death. It kind of went awry. The whole thing kind of went awry. The judge walked out.
Yes, you know, as like most of Castle's plans, they never go 100% correctly, right?
That was not good. Okay, so now it kind of comes down to, in the end, kind of a bit of a triangle. Right? We have this judge, Judge Caldwell, who, what was happening is he was kind of in cahoots with Marco Sutter. So Marco Sutter would extort these immigrants, kind of get money off them. And when he couldn't anymore, or he decided it was time, he would have the judge prosecute them. The judge then was getting a kickback from a prison in Texas.
Yeah, and that
to
was...
to send them there.
That was interesting. And then it's like, okay, so obviously you got these two, but how do you get the info on these immigrants? So they had to know that there was another person involved. There was no way it was just the two of them because, you know, you got to have your supplier.
Okay, very true, which leads us to the final, the final person. So before we get to that, I was just fascinated this idea. It always really, really bothers me, the idea that there would be a dirty judge.
Yeah.
Well, something about the justice system in particular. I mean, I know occasionally there's, you know, politicians who take bribes. I know occasionally there are bad cops that take bribes. But the idea is something about a judge. You just think they're almost invincible. Like, they would never do that.
Yeah, they need to be Judge Judy. And, you know, if we ever heard that Judge Judy did something like that, the world would just crumble.
No, Judge Judy would kick their butts.
I know. And that's the thing, is they need to have her on Castle to start getting... because this isn't our first bad judge. We've had a few.
Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah.
No, she really represents judges.
Yes.
Yes. I've had some great judges. Have you ever done jury duty?
No, actually, I'm pretty lucky, knock on wood here, that I have never had to do jury duty.
How come I've gotten that letter 5 times?
I don't know. Like, I never get picked for mock juries either. Probably because I put, like, insane things on there to get out of it.
I think there's something really powerful about a good judge. Mm-hmm. Like, even when you go turn up for jury duty and you're so angry that you're there, you're just like, anything I can do to get out of this, that a judge with personality, and they kind of convey like, hey, you guys, I know you don't want to be here, but this is an amazing privilege and we're all Americans. And, you know, you just start to feel like, I am so going to do my duty and be here and serve. That's happened to me every time I've done jury duty, so.
That's so funny. Well, I've never done jury duty, but I have been in a courtroom. Luckily, mm-hmm. never for myself, but one time I was there with my younger brother, and he was maybe 13 at the time, and he was having to go before the judge about his fine for running his head into the soda machine at school and breaking this. So it was, like, so much money. And the judge, so this is my experience, said, son, in all my years on this bench, I've never heard of something so stupid. So the entire courtroom laughed, because, like, it's a courtroom full of boys like himself.
It was like a juvie trial. He had to go before a judge for putting his head in the vending machine?
Yes. So that's, well, I'm from Tyler, Texas. It's not that small, but it's not that big. But so
they had time in the courtroom. Yeah. That's awesome. Boy, we used to, I'm lucky that I never got thrown in front of a judge. At boarding school, I went to a performing arts high school, and we used to get four or five girls, and we would tip the vending machines and get, I just remember specifically wanting to get Hostess donuts out of the vending machines, but we would get free food out of the vending machines. So that's a little confession right there. Yeah. Anywho, yeah, so judges. Interesting. Was your brother, didn't get a record for that, did he?
No. Luckily, you know, again, knock on wood, he doesn't have an adult record. And his juvie record is just mild stuff like that, tickets.
And your record's clean.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I'm the smart one.
Guys here at AfterBuzz TV Castle, we are bringing you this show entirely crime-free. Right on. Right on.
I didn't say crime free. I said I don't have a record.
I'm just saying I didn't get caught. Oh, boy. Yep. Isn't that the truth? So, anyway. All right. We didn't even mention this guy, Alonso Sanchez, who flew in to kind of distract the whole storyline. Flew in from El Salvador. Well, you know what he pointed out was the fact that although it appeared that Eddie Ramirez may have been like a dirty cop in his former country, El Salvador, what we really come to find is that Eddie was a good guy.
Yeah.
And that was my point with the way he put the reptile in the cage.
And you were right all along. Comes back. Just like we thought the teacher was squirrely. He was good.
Ha! Yeah. You know? So, Mr. Emerson, boom, there's our guy.
Yeah.
Huh? Do you still have that actor's profile up? Because, gosh, both Lucretia and I recognize that guy. Did everyone else feel that way? We're just like, we know that actor.
Because he's been in, like, everything. His name is J.D. Walsh, but, yeah, I mean.
J.D.
You know, like, Franklin and Bash, that was one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And then you had, you know, Bones, smart guy. He was a regular on that one.
I guess Bones just got renewed for another season.
Yes, for the final one. Mm-hmm.
Jeez. They've been on TV a long time.
Yeah, almost. Like, Castle came out just right after, so.
Yay, Castle! Yeah. All right, well, just a fun note. This episode was written by Castle writers Robert Bella and Adam Frost. Good job.
Oh, cool.
Good job. I thought it was a good episode.
Yeah, did you enjoy it? Too. And several people have mentioned, like, Boo69Bs and Tracy D talking about how we don't need to forget Castle's flashbacks. Oh, yeah, I know. I was like, it's $400 order of Chinese food. Or, you know, wound up being a mix, like, because he had, you know, Korean. And then, yes.
Amazingly awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much, because we're obviously heading back to that storyline, you guys. Presumably it was kimchi that he had, which is good, by the way.
I love kimchi.
Yeah, me too. So that was totally fascinating. He took a bite of the kimchi in the ESL class, and he immediately had flashbacks kind of in restaurant, in a room, and then this temple.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, a temple that he remembered seeing, which he located online, showed it to Becca, and said, I saw this temple. Like, there's something about this. Are we going to see that addressed in the next episode?
I believe so, because that's why he's coming to Hollywood, because it was not actually in Korea. It was in Koreatown here in L.A.
Yes, and it was good because Beckett kind of talked him down. She's like, you don't know enough yet. You're not going to Korea, although that would have been fun, too. But, in fact, it is Koreatown.
I just hope he goes to the Korean spa, because then we can get some shirtless Castle.
Oh, my gosh.
Like I say, I've never been to Koreatown and not taken my clothes off.
Say who? Oh, yeah. let's see, the Olympic Spa here in Koreatown is famous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely. You can go very inexpensively and nothing inappropriate, guys. It's really like a health spa.
It's just
spa.
A culture
it's wonderful.
Thing.
Yeah. No,
hot
it's totally
saunas,
cool.
Hot, you know, tubs.
And you just drop, you just fully go nude in a room with, you know, 30 other people.
Yeah.
It's, you know, women, men separated. You get scrubbed down. Have you been scrubbed down there?
Oh, yeah.
They will exfoliate
the Korean body
you.
Scrub. I liken it to a scene in Evil Dead, which I won't mention. This is a family show. But, yeah, that's what a Korean body scrub is like.
Those ladies are not messing, yeah. And they just tell you what to do, and then they throw you in the cold shower and say wash off. Yeah,
oh, they don't bathe you there at Tikkun. They bathe you,
mm.
Wash your hair and everything.
Wouldn't that be neat to have your hair washed? That's like the ultimate luxury.
Yeah,
I
like being bathed by an old Korean woman. I'm not afraid to admit it.
Yes. So wonderful. All right, well, that's going to be a fun episode. Thank you for pointing out that I totally skipped over that whole storyline. Because we do, we still have these, is it 8 weeks that Castle doesn't remember? Is it 8 weeks?
Yeah, it was quite a big chunk of time.
I don't know, 8 weeks. We still have this whole mystery. I mean, he got nailed in that courtroom episode. A couple episodes ago, because he still can't remember what in the heck happened to him.
Yeah, and I kind of wondered when they brought that up, they were going to actually explain it. Because I know that's what fans have been wondering. Like, why hasn't that been explained yet?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So we know he was in Thailand, presumably. We think we're going to, right? We know we're going to Koreatown now.
Yes.
And we know he was found on this boat.
Mm-hmm.
So the pieces are coming together. Well, that could be several episodes wrapping up that storyline, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it'll definitely
like
be more than one,
issue.
Yeah.
And we should probably, you know, at some point get to the Castle Beckett unification.
Yeah,
where
everybody knows what's
around.
Going on, yeah.
But I guess that won't really happen probably until she resolves Lockset.
Yes, and I guess they've got so much they need to wrap up.
Yeah, they do.
We've got Lockset, we've got Castle's memory loss, we have their relationship, you know, that whole, you know, when can they tell people, because they're already back together, so it's sort of wrapped up, but, you know, we have so much going on.
It's nice to see them together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're in episode 13, so we're about halfway through the season, so... Hey, those are some pretty big subject matters to tackle. I loved seeing that Kate Woods was the director of this episode. Aren't a whole lot of female TV directors in this town. So when they're working, I like to give them a shout out.
Oh, no. And Castle, I believe she's directed episodes before, as well as they've had other females come in and direct. So
yep.
It's a very feminist show.
Yeah, they're a very inclusive set, I think. Hey, did you catch Stana Katic on the red carpet at the Independent Spirit Awards on Saturday, day before the Oscars? She got a lot of press.
No, actually, my grandma turned 75 that day, so I was planning a big party. So,
yeah. Did she really?
Yeah.
How was the party?
It was fun. I basically was only in Texas for 48 hours, so it was hard. I was very jet lagged, you know, for the Oscars on Sunday, and I had to be here. But, yeah, it was really nice, you know, throw my grandma a big birthday party.
What's your grandma's name?
Jean.
That's happy birthday, Jean. That's my middle name. Jennifer Jean. What's her first name?
Reba. She'll kill me now.
Reba
but,
Jean, girl.
Reba I'm the Jean. Only one without a country name.
What's your middle name, Lucretia?
Danielle, like Danielle Steele.
Lucretia Danielle. Those are all some beautiful Texas names. we'd like to know your middle names. That's a little shout out to all our fans. You guys, thank you so much for joining us here on the AfterBuzz TV Castle After Show. Mm-hmm. Thanks for writing on the message boards as well. I'm J2 Snyder. Thank you so much for sending us messages during the week. Lucretia and I really appreciate the heads up. Any kind of Stana, any kind of Nathan, any Castle updates or news, we love hearing from you. Thank you for joining us. Lucretia, where can they find you?
Of course, you guys can find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet. And also this Saturday at the World Famous Comedy Store, I'll have a show at 7:30 called Bitch.
Are you doing stand-up at the Comedy Store?
Yeah.
You're kidding. That's fantastic. Bitch, where'd you get that title?
Well, luckily, it's a long-going show that apparently I'm a really good fit for, so I wonder what that means.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. Break a leg, and you're going to tell us how it went next week,
alrighty.
All right? Love you guys. Keep watching Castle and keep joining us here at AfterBuzz TV. Mwah.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.